You know, if I would have applied myself, I could have gone to the NBA.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. But it's just like, it's been done. You know, I didn't want to, I was like, I don't want to be a follower. Hi, I'm Jason Concepcion.
And I'm Shea Serrano. And we are back. We have a new podcast from Wondery. It's called Six Trophies.
Woo!
And it's the f***ing best.
Each week, Shea Serrano and I are combing through all the NBA storylines, finding the best, most interesting, most compelling stories, and then handing out six pop culture themed trophies for six basketball related activities.
Trophies like the Dominic Toretto, I Live My Life a Quarter Mile at a Time trophy, which is given to someone who made a short-term decision with no regard for future consequence.
Or the Christopher Nolan Tenet trophy, which is given to someone who did something that we didn't understand.
Catalina Wine Mixer trophy.
Ooh, the Lauryn Hill, you might win some, but you just lost one trophy. And what's more, the NBA playoffs are here, so you want to make Six Trophies your go-to companion podcast through all the craziness. Follow Six Trophies on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. Listen ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
What's up, y'all? It's Drewski, and I've teamed up with Mountain Dew to produce a hilarious new basketball podcast called The Dew Zone with Drewski. Learn the backstories of your favorite ballers and celebrities like Jamal Murray. Did you have, like, a favorite team? Was it the Raptors at the time or no? Was the Raptors even started around that time?
Come on, bro.
I ain't that old, fam. You're talking like I'm 50.
Taylor Rooks, Asia Wilson, and many more. You won't want to miss this. Listen to The Dew Zone with Drewski on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey there. We at Blue Wire just wanted to take a second to thank you for listening to this podcast. We know everything outside is pretty scary and uncertain, but we're committed to helping you get through your day by talking about the sports and teams that you love most. If you're looking for more great podcasts to distract you, check out BlueWirePods.com. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the podcast and stay safe.
Blue Wire.
What's up, Nets fans? Welcome to Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Faye. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. And back on the show, Matt Brooks of Nets Daily. Guys, how we doing?
I'll go ahead and pop in. I'm doing well. Enjoying a day of causing absolute havoc on Nets Twitter. So, you know, I'm maniacally rubbing my hands together and saying my work here is done.
Matt no longer has the hiccup, so we can record.
Yeah, I had the hiccup for the first time in, I must have been 10 years, so that was exciting. You know, that's excitement nowadays in quarantine, is the hiccups.
And before we get into it, quick reminder, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods. As well, this episode's brought to you by BetOnline.ag. But we'll be talking about Kyrie Irving today. And obviously, with the way the NBA season's going, it doesn't look like we're going to get a regular season anyway. So we're going to do a season review on Kyrie. And to kick things off, give me a quick review of Kyrie Irving's season last year, Matt.
Short but sweet would be the best way to describe it. Some huge, huge performances. His performance against the Bulls, where he just basically didn't miss for a whole half. That was exciting. The first game of the year is probably my favorite of his. Just against that Timberwolves team, he just came out with so much fire. You know, he had basically a fresh start in Brooklyn and wanted to impress all these fans. And my goodness, I don't know if there's a better way to do that than, you know, nearly take the game. I mean, he put that entire team on his back. And I believe he had 50, right? 51 in game one. That, you know, it started sweet, looked good. It was a little rocky as the team was sort of figuring each other out. And the sad part is they never really learned how to play with Kyrie. But he personally was excellent. So, that would be my best way of describing that.
Yeah, short and sweet is a good one to sort of chuck it in there. But I guess if you want to be the cynical type, you can chuck in maybe controversial, maybe tumultuous. If you're buying into some of the comments that were made off the court and some of the rumblings, the ESPN articles, the behind the scenes, all this BS that sort of came in with it. But I think on the court, you know, only 20 games, you know, in those 20 games, and it's only won 8 games. So did Kyrie make the team better? That's the big question that was going around. Are the Nets really better without Kyrie Irving? A lot of really dumb storylines came and surrounded Kyrie Irving throughout his very short on-court tenure for the Nets. But, you know, when he was playing, boy, oh boy, was he exciting. You know, I did a little mini thing for Nets Republic where I was able to just go through his best and worst games. And it was hard to narrow it down. And, you know, there was only probably one or two games that sort of made that worst games list. But overall, his season was just exciting when he was there.
Yeah, I mean, he was like an instant highlight on the court when he was actually playing. And like Matt mentioned, like the start off the season with a 50 piece, it was just crazy, especially being there. It just was like he wasn't missing shots. He was carrying the team. But again, filled with injuries, we barely saw him on the court. And like Jack mentioned, there was definitely some drama, you know, off the court, you know, depending if you believe it. But I think there's probably at least a little bit of truth to it.
For sure. I mean, he put the team in a situation where he was the one who started the discussions, because it's funny what this is all this little layover period between whenever next season starts and that last Lakers game. He was the one who kind of kickstarted all this, saying that, you know, moves needed to be made and it's obvious, it's glaring. So we can thank Kyrie Irving for the Nets community coveting every single player under the sun.
And those comments were made for me after his worst performance of the season. In terms of, I took into account, you know, when the shoulder injury was happening. You know, there was the Denver game, the Jazz game, sort of games where you know that he was sore, because he obviously did it against the New Orleans Pelicans. You know, Billy did a really good job of sort of pinpointing that sort of moment. So for me, I didn't really like the timing of those comments. I understand, and like, you know, I guess if you're looking at them objectively and from outside the box, they do make sense. You know, the Nets aren't a championship contender right now with what we have, and that's why Nets Twitter goes insane every single day just trying to come up with some third star trades or bit piece trades. You know, I know you think, Matt, that the Nets will probably just end up with Jay Crowder. That's fine, you know. we'll add someone else to the list. But yeah, I think Kyrie's comments and leadership style, sort of off the court stuff, there's still plenty of questions about it, and I think some of them are warranted.
100%. Now, moving to a more positive note, what were some of your favorite Kyrie moments of the season?
I mentioned the Timberwolves game. That was a good one. I got to bring up the Knicks game. Yes. That was huge. You know, hitting this dagger in the face. That was against RJ Barrett, right?
Yes.
Yeah. At that point, you know, was in the running. I mean, what is this, like a three-game sample? But hey, at that point, he was in the Rookie of the Year running. He had a nice little start to the year, and it was just a big statement victory. You know, I think for a lot of people, it felt like, all right, the Nets are here. They're going to be, you know, I mean, not that, you know, in getting Kyrie and KD, they all already kind of had a leg up in a lot of ways, but that was a real in-your-face shove it to, I guess, the rival team across the pond. So that was a big one for me. That was the one that stood out to me. But you know, I the first one is the one I remember really, really writing about, that Timberwolves game, just because of, you could just feel the emotion. And I honestly, like, the moment where he actually failed was the one in which he actually missed that last shot. That was the moment where you felt like you got the most raw emotion from him. You could just tell that he wanted that shot to drop in so badly. And I think that resonated really well with just about everybody.
The real connection to the fan base.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And we know he's a homegrown kid, and we know how much he wants to be. Obviously, I don't know how much of that is just marketing or whatever, but I think there seems to be a genuine connection with Brooklyn and Kyrie Irving and vice versa. Within that Timberwolves game, the moment where he's sort of counting the defenders that he just laid down, 1, 2, 3, that was an insane moment for me. The Chicago game for me, because I was able to watch that live where he just hit his first 10 shots, and I was just like, this kid's not going to freaking miss. And it was just one of the most insanely efficient performances I've ever seen. And that last shot to end the half, where he just stole it and just yacked it and just got the three ball, was just absolutely insane. And you know, I was lucky enough to see him a couple of times live against the New Orleans Pelicans. It wasn't his best game, but still able to see some wonderful, masterful performances in person, because he's one of the most exciting players you can watch, and he is worth the admission. And we're lucky to have him on this team, which is, I know we'll probably discuss it a lot in terms of his health. Let's just hope that he's playing more than 20 games next year.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, the Chicago game just passed. It just screams like offensive skill. Like the fact he missed 4 shots that entire game and scored 54 points. Like, I remember doing some research earlier in the year, and it was like literally one of the best 50-point performances based off of efficiency in NBA history.
It was him, Wilt, and Michael Jordan for people who have scored 50 points or more in the efficiency that they did.
Yep. So that was crazy. Like you mentioned, obviously Minnesota on opening night, I think it was just like a big boost. And like Matt mentioned, that three against, you know, the Knicks to win the game, it would have really sucked to lose to the Knicks on, you know, the second game of the season after losing to Minnesota and being obviously New York across the pond. It's just like, all right, they got the guys and we still beat them. And, you know, we'd hear about it for like till the next times those teams met up. And even like you mentioned, Jack, against New Orleans, he popped too, 39 points. He had a lot of really big games. And then also just a consistent highlight. Like, there really wasn't a game this season where he didn't post at least one highlight per half. But talking about the season in general, would you guys call it a success or a disappointment?
All right, here's my first. I don't know if it's a hot take. It feels terrible to say this. So I'm thinking about what the expectations were, because it's very easy to be like, oh, well, you know, we had these great performances. You look at, you know, the, like, for example, like, it feels ridiculous to call some of, you know, one of his 20 games, that Bulls performance, anything but a success. I mean, his stats were at his all-time best. He put up career numbers really across the board. But what you have to think about is that coming into this year, everybody was expecting him to take the Nets to, you know, their 45, 48 wins. Some people expect him to be an MVP candidate. I was actually one of those people. I thought that there was a ton of upside for him this year as an individual player, as an individual star, to really make his presence known as the guy in Brooklyn. And, you know, and just become this like franchise icon in a sense. That obviously didn't happen. He missed a lot of time. That's, of course, by no means his fault at all. But because of the expectations that I had, and I think many other people had, I would say it was a little bit of a disappointment. I think we all wanted him out there playing a little bit more. You know, again, he can't control that. That's really just how it worked out with his body. But I'm just trying to judge what I've been given, and that's kind of where I'm at right now. It feels weird saying that, though, and like a little slimy almost.
Yeah, I mean, I know it's a disappointment as well, Matt. And I think the same sense is because, you know, how much can you judge a 20-game sample size and project forward and go, all right, look, we know how Kyrie fits around the rest of the guys. Now, how does KD fit around these guys? I still have no idea. I have some idea. That's probably a bit hyperbolic, but I have very little idea of how he fits with Spencer, how he fits with Karras, how he fits with Torian Prince, how he fits with Jarrett Allen and or DeAndre Jordan, because I have 20 games to look at. And in a lot of those games, Karras might have been injured as well. Spencer might have been injured as well. A question that is, and I also had him quite high on the sort of MVP narrative, because I thought he bounces back, he plays 65, 70 games, and he leads the Nets to, you know, top five sort of seed, then I reckon there's a really big chance for him. Individually, this is obviously probably an irrational question to ask, but, you know, we've got a podcast, why not? It's quarantine, let's do it. Do you guys think that Kyrie Irving fit better on those Boston Celtics teams as the 1A guy, or in this small 20-game sample size as a 1A guy? And in terms of sort of just on-court team fit around the Boston Celtics system, on-court team fit in the Brooklyn Nets system?
Matt, you want this first?
Which one is he fit on? I'm doing a bit of a cop out. So it's tough to say. One, like, are we talking about the Kenny Atkinson version of the Nets, or are we talking about like the version of the Nets with Kevin Durant? I think like his fit with Kevin Durant is better than anything that we're gonna see either this year or the year before that. But I don't know. I actually think that like what he was in this year was pretty good for him. I mean, it's tough because like the second best guy on the team this year, at least, was a guy that played the same position of him. So I guess I would have to say Boston, you know, but I don't know. That's tricky, honestly. I you know, in both situations, it was a place where he was the number one option. And I don't really know if that is the right way for him to go. I think he needs to be on a team where he's playing with another superstar talent that he has a great deal of respect for and can kind of play off of. You know, he's like, I hate to use like Batman and Robin because he's like the most supersized version of Robin possible. But he is like, he'll come in and you know, he'll hit a couple of, I guess, like, like swift punches in the gut, you know? I mean, that's kind of what he does. He's coming at you. He's giving you sparks of energy. And that's, I think that is probably the best role for him. So if I had to pick with the two, I guess Boston, but I think next year we're going to see Kyrie at his absolute, his absolute zenith.
Yeah, I agree with Matt here. I think obviously it's extremely difficult to determine based off the fact he only played 20 games, and he was in Boston for 2 years, so he got a little bit better feel for that system. And I would say compared to this year's Nets, that Boston team was more talented. You know, across the board, they had guys that fit the system. But I would say in Brooklyn, they let him run pick and roll a little bit more than he was in Boston. I think he really enjoyed that. But also, like Matt mentioned, playing next to KD and not having to be that number one guy, I think when Kyrie's at his best, we saw what he did in Cleveland when LeBron was that number one guy. He ran the show offensively. Kyrie was able to excel and really just had some huge performances when they needed it most.
Yeah, I don't know if it's like a Batman and Robin thing. I agree. It's the easiest analogy to come up with. But maybe it's like an Iron Man and Spider-Man sort of role.
I like that.
Oh, wow. That was good.
Yeah, let's great go Marvel. Cut. Let's go Marvel with it.
Very good. That was an excellent cut. Well done, sir.
I mean, I love Spider-Man and I love Kyrie Irving. So that's literally my favorite superhero. So it sort of works a bit.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I mean, yeah, it is like the prototypical comparison. I like the point that you made about running pick and roll. I feel like, in a way, I mean, the thing that's great about Kyrie is that he's just so good offensively that you can really plug him into any system. So if you're running him in a pick and roll heavy system where he's got the ball in his hands a lot, he's going to detonate off pull-ups, whether it's mid-range, three-point land. And then, of course, he drew way more fouls this year. And I think that's just because he was, you know, entrusted the basketball so much and said, hey, like, go score for us. So that's a big thing for him. But on the flip side, they ran him a little bit more off ball in Boston. His catch and shoot numbers were really prolific. They were, again, this year, just a considerably less volume. So I think that's a testament to just this guy can fit in really any system. It's just about surrounding him by the right pieces, whether that be more of the role-playing skill set or of like the actual star superstardom skill set.
And I think the point you mentioned about needing to respect the other player, like the fact Boston didn't have anyone I think that Kyrie thought was maybe on his level, kind of hurt that whole, you know, chemistry there. But the fact he'll be with KD and he obviously respects KD, and I think he probably accepts KD as at least a better player than him or at the same level. So I think that should help in terms of like on the court, where it felt like at times this year with the Nets, they're almost scared to get in Kyrie's way.
Yeah, that was definitely an issue. And another sort of fit question, speaking about KD, and it sort of just came to mind when we were chatting about Spider-Man, Batman, Robin, all the damn superheroes. Do you guys think that he'll fit better prototypically and schematically, systematically with Kevin Durant or LeBron, or like he did with LeBron James? What do you feel? And I mean, we can be biased here. We can be unbiased. I don't know how you want to tackle the answer. But do you think LeBron is a better fit alongside Kyrie Irving in a championship, you know, led team? Or is it Kevin Durant the answer?
When you asked me the first question, the thing that popped in my head and when Matt brought up like KD and Kyrie's fit, like, how do you even stop a Kyrie and KD pick and pop?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of too. And the thing that, I mean, what's funny is like there's a very good chance that we'll get a pretty, a situation where there aren't too many independent variables, in that there's a good chance the Nets have the exact same head coach that LeBron and Kyrie had. True. Kyrie had. So I think we'll get a pretty good measurement of this. Jack, I know you were going to say something real quick.
Oh, no, I was just going to say in the sense that LeBron and KD are probably two of the best players that we've seen in our lifetime, you know, since we've been, you know, adults and actually following the NBA. And they are still two drastically different players in the way that they play basketball. Obviously, LeBron, a lead ball handler, sort of, you know, essentially a point forward. Kevin Durant, sort of more prototypical offensive weapon, who has some really nice defensive chops in terms of how he's developed himself, that, you know, in that Golden State system. You know, LeBron's still a nice defender as well. You know, both are different players, but I guess when you are that damn good, you're sort of nitpicking a little bit, as I tend to be.
I'll pick one of the two. I could actually see Durant being a better fit. The pick and pop thing is real. I don't know if Durant is going to, because I saw somebody toss this around. It is a little bit of like, not a hit to the ego, but it is crazy to ask one of the two best players in the world, either LeBron or Durant, to set screens, you know, on ball for another player. That is a big ask. The one advantage is if, and it really depends upon who the Nets hire for this next coaching position, but if they bring in somebody that is going to run a little bit more off-ball stuff, Durant's got some experience with that. you know, he was in an offense in Golden State that was very heavy on like cross screens, you know, very low, back screens and stuff like that. So there's a chance that it might be a little bit more of a congruous fit. I just think that, you know, it compared to like what Durant is worked under in terms of like coaching philosophies and what LeBron has worked under, I'd say Durant has definitely worked under a little bit more of like sophistication offensively. So
yeah,
that might play into it. I just think he's a little more like well-versed. He's, you know, he's traveled the land a little bit more, if you want to put it that way, with basketball philosophy.
And you can, I think it's a fair argument to say that, you know, if KD comes back to the KD we saw, like offensively, you know, he's probably more versatile than LeBron just for the fact that his jump shot is pure. Like we're talking about one of the best shooters of all time. And I think anytime you're an elite shooter, you just compliment players really well. Not to say that LeBron, you know, arguably still the best player, arguably the GOAT, but he's playing LeBron's way. And obviously that's super successful, but not everybody fits well next to LeBron. We saw that happen with the Cleveland team after Kyrie left when they added D Wade and a couple other names, and it really just didn't work.
Yeah, LeBron is the system. You know, like sort of Matt's sort of talking about, you know, coaching philosophies and different sort of on-court philosophies and game sort of X's and O's. KD has played it, you know, different, you know, under, you know, Scott Brooks in OKC, there was certainly a sort of my turn, your turn sort of thing with Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant. Mm-hmm. And maybe that could happen, you know, when we see Ty Lue or whoever else coach this team, you know, and that worked fine. They were a damn successful team. They obviously didn't win a championship and they probably maybe underexceeded, but they were very, very young. And I guess with a bit more maturity with both of these two, they know how to win championships and know what it takes. And I think I'm going to be the LeBron stan here. I personally think it's LeBron James just because I think Kyrie off ball is like putting Steph off ball. You know, I think he can be that damn dangerous. I think he's a little bit quicker than Steph as well. And I think I would like to see him utilized more in that sort of setting. But, you know, obviously it comes down to whatever coach is implemented. And I think that when you have two ridiculously talented superstars like a Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you need to play around with it. You don't want to become predictable, and you want to make sure you're utilizing their full array of talents in ways, you know, by putting creative lineups around them, you know, implementing different sets around them, allowing them to, you know, go ISO and sort of implement their own individual talents. So for me, you know, a head coach is obviously going to be important, and that's something to discuss on different episodes. But I personally think because LeBron and Kyrie Irving have shown it, they've beaten the greatest team, you know, regular season team in the history of the league. And they did it in a way that was just absolutely insane. One of the best championship wins in the history of the game. So I'm picking LeBron only because I've seen it and seen it work. And I think that it would work if we were to have a current version of LeBron in Brooklyn right now.
I can't argue with that.
You got the evidence. So, I mean, it's hard for us to come back. I mean, we'll have to see next year revisit this on the podcast. But
Hope I'm wrong.
Talking about Kyrie a little bit more. What were some of his strengths this season? Obviously, we've kind of, you know, glorified him and his offensive skill set. What, like, really stuck out for his strengths this year that maybe you didn't feel before coming to the season?
So I don't know if this is – I mean, you could say his scoring. I feel like that's the boring answer. I actually thought his leadership was way better than I expected. I thought that there were, you know, he had that thing in January. It was not good. I just think he misspoke. I honestly do. Cause I was one of the hardest people on him, you know, on him for it. Just the statements, you know, kind of going through the list. It just seemed like such a tone deaf type of thing to do. But I, you know, maybe he did just try to cover his tracks and a little bit, but I thought his leadership was pretty good. It seemed like everybody on the team felt good about him. I didn't come away this year feeling like it was a really disastrous year for him. I think that he was perceived poorly at certain points, but I was expecting, you know, an absolute nightmare just based on everything that I saw in Boston. And I don't know. It wasn't that bad. If you want me to go beyond the off-court stuff, because I, you know, it's kind of a tricky thing to get into. None of us really, really know unless we're, you know, wearing a Nets jersey in their locker room every single night. I would say the way I actually didn't mind his, and this is really, I guess, a strange critique and like kind of probably a little too narrow almost, but I kind of like the way he defended pick and rolls. This is a really weird thing to isolate on, but he does this thing where the, you know, let's say the other team's center sets a screen, the point guard tries to go by, he does this spin move around the pick.
Ooh.
It's like one of my favorite weird NBA movements. I don't know what else to describe that as. So I thought he was fine defensively. He didn't really bother me that much. The numbers don't really support that at all. So maybe I'm just falling for something that looks fancy. But I don't know. I mean, he kind of was as advertised in a lot of ways. So I kind of knew what to expect. But, you know, I think that the things that I was more worried about, the defense, the leadership, weren't really as detrimental as I thought they would be.
Yeah, I think that you can certainly make the argument for that. And I would probably agree for the most part with it, Matt. I think that, you know, does no one remember how he shoved Rodion's Kurucs because he wasn't in the right position? Or was it Rodion's or was it Janan? I can't remember.
No, it was Musa.
Sorry, I get my young European rookies mixed up.
By the way, I'm not the only guy to do that. I'm pretty sure somebody else did that with Musa last year.
I mean, if I
wouldn't be surprised.
Yeah, it certainly wouldn't be surprising. And I think for the defense, I would agree as well in terms of the pick and roll. But I've known on plenty of episodes, Nick and I sort of talked about it. So like, we had Karras and Spencer, all three of them were healthy, and we expect Kyrie to be the worst defender, but he's showing the most effort and intelligence on that end of the floor. There's plenty of times where he just knows. Like, he's not necessarily the best defender, but he's one of the smarter ones because he just has more experience and in different settings and just seeing different, he just knows. He's a smarter player. And when you're smarter, you can make up for your weaknesses athletically and in terms of, obviously expending so much energy on the offensive end. I'm going to pick an offensive stat. His per 36 numbers were by far, not by far, but quite easily the best of his career. And one stat in particular that just stuck out to me, and it's a very simple one. He shot 92% from the free throw line. 92% from the free throw line on the most free throws that he shot in his career over five. It is, I've always complained about the Nets free throw shooting in a lot of ways, but Kyrie Irving is just sublime there. And I'm just like, please get the ball to Kyrie Irving whenever it's a late game situation.
Yeah, I know you love that free throw shooting tack.
Love it.
You guys are right, though. I mean, offensively, he was everything you kind of imagined. And I mean, if he doesn't get the shoulder injury, I'm kind of intrigued of what his shooting percentages look like. With the shoulder injury, he finished the year, obviously, only 20 games. 47% from the field, 39% from three, and like Jack mentioned, 92% from the free throw line. Not crazy to think that a 50-40-90 season wouldn't be possible for him. Maybe next year with KD's back, the efficiency will pop a little bit more. But like Matt mentioned, you mentioned, Jack, I thought as a leader, I was a little scared because obviously we heard all the stories in Boston. We even heard the stuff in Cleveland that maybe he'd be a little bit crazy. But it seemed like early on that he really wanted to work on that aspect. And even like the connection to the fans and like his early interactions with the media, it got a little bit worse as the season progressed. And defensively, I thought he was confident enough where you didn't necessarily have to worry about him. In certain matchups, obviously, he's going to be undersized, but I thought there was enough positives in that area. What would you guys say were some of the weaknesses?
Before we do, Nick, we're talking about sort of the off-court stuff.
With currently no NBA, NHL, or MLB, you might think there's nothing to bet on. Well, you'd be wrong. Our exclusive partner, BetOnline, still has hundreds of events, games, and props to wager on. From the online casino to poker and blackjack, they're bringing Vegas to you. Missing the NFL? No problem. BetOnline has live daily Madden NFL 20 simulations you can bet on. You can still bet on Survivor, Big Brother, American Idol, stock prices, and even Nathan's hot dog eating contest. All open 24 hours a day and all online. Use promo code BLUEWIRE to join today and receive your new welcome bonus. BetOnline, your online wagering solution.
In hindsight, and obviously with some time removed, do you think that the way the Nets handled, obviously, the initial sort of revealing of the injury and sort of reporting of the injury, do you think that that is a slight more on Kyrie Irving and sort of being like, no, you guys can't tell him anything? Or is that more of a slight to Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson for being, dishonest in a lot of ways?
I'm always going to take like Matt's approach that he said he's going to cop out because like if we don't have a Nets uniform on, it's really tough to say. I mean, you can look at the evidence in the past that the Nets were always super conservative with injuries. Like they're not always telling you like, hey, X player's going to be back. Like think about Alan Crabb from 2 years ago. We like were told that he had a bruised knee. He missed the rest of the season, ended up getting surgery. So like it's somewhat of the Nets, but I also wouldn't be surprised if Kyrie was kind of, I don't want to say difficult about it, but wasn't really like, hey, tell everyone what's wrong with me. And I also think there's some aspect of like them actually not really knowing about how bad the injury was. Even the way it was kind of handled when he came back, it was like, oh, the cortisone shot healed everything. Then next thing you know, a couple weeks later, he's out for the season.
Yeah, I mean, he has his own, like, medical team. So yeah. Yeah. I would say that's on him to communicate that if he's, you know, I mean, he's allowed to do what he wants. But in a way, if you're working with, you know, working with an employer, you'd want to sort of tie them in and tell them, hey, here's what my medical team is doing. So it's tough to discern, which, because the Nets have a history of not being super upfront about injuries all the time. It did feel like, though, that this was a little bit more of a Kyrie controlling this than the Nets being like, hey, we're not going to tell you guys what the injury report is night after night. I don't know. That's just me. But, I mean, yeah, it was – I think that was a little bit distracting. It's for – you know, if it's just that he's not telling the fans and they're keeping that internal, then I don't really think that's that big of a deal. If he's not telling his teammates and not telling his team what his injury status is, that is a big deal. But yeah. I don't think we're prudent to which one of those that is. So, yeah, again, I'm pulling my third cop-out card or second cop-out card of the episode. I just don't know which one it is. So I'm not willing to quite go there yet.
Jack, what are you thinking?
Yeah, I think that it's a little bit from column A, a little bit from column B. I think that it's frustrating just as a fan of the team. But obviously, is that what Kyrie wants? And at the end of the day, I don't care. As a fan, if my superstars and the best players on the team that I follow are happy, then you can tell me whatever the hell I need to know, because I would rather make sure the players on the team who are there, you know, 24/7, they're the ones that are living and working in an environment that benefits them. Not a person down 20 hours away doing a podcast with a couple of cool American dudes. It doesn't benefit me in any sense of the imagination to have that information. But, you know, as fans, we're the ones that pay the tickets. We're the ones. So there was certainly a frustration level. And I think that they got caught out, you know, Kyrie Irving or whether it was Shawn Marks and Kenny Atkinson, they got caught with egg on their face. And I think that we sort of saw beyond that. And we've seen a lot this season in general that, you know, there's been quote-unquote leaks more. We've seen more Woj reports, Shams reports, you know, ESPN reports that we haven't seen in yesteryear. And I think that's what happens when you have superstars and, you know, different teams and people around them that are going to leak to those guys rather than sort of keeping it in-house. You know, a lot of that news did pertain to Kyrie Irving, to Kevin Durant whenever there were little things popping out about them. So I think that it was frustrating, and I think that it's a lesson to be learned on just maybe forthright honesty. You know, maybe it is rich coming from the fact that, you know, Nets Twitter and Golden State Twitter were debating, you know, with Draymond Green about his sort of comments that he's sort of saying about, you know, Draymond, Kevin Durant's lack of honesty throughout the year. You know, but I think that in certain respects, it would have just helped and gone, what is the detriment of just saying, you know, Kyrie Irving's injured here. We don't necessarily know the extent of it. It's a complicated injury. And they eventually came out and said that anyway. So it's not like, why wouldn't you just have said it? And I mean, if Kyrie's like, don't tell it or I'm getting Kenny fired, and maybe that's why Kenny got fired. New conspiracy theory. What's it about all the veganisms? But it's I think you can't necessarily answer one, you know, black or white. There's definitely shades of gray.
I think you nailed it when you said it was a lesson for the franchise, because like, you just can't do this anymore because you have superstars and you are now a relevant team. You know, last year when you were the fun Nets and everyone's like, oh, look at these guys. They're making the playoffs. They've got the rebuild. Like, no one really cares that much about your team or your injuries. But now everyone cares, especially going to next year when title contention is a real thing.
Yeah, I'll put it like this. Woj has only got, you know, I don't know how Woj probably sleeps for like 3 hours a night. So maybe he's got
does he sleep?
Let's pretend like he's got I don't know. Let's pretend he's got 12 hours a day that he can work. Maybe we'll go 11 to make my point even better. He's got 11 hours of the day. It's a lot different when you got Alan Crabb as your main guy that you're sort of hiding as the injury guy versus Kyrie. Exactly. Sure. What Jack said. You know, this is what's gonna happen. We all learned it. We learned the you know, how distracting this is game to game when it's Kyrie Irving sort of getting his timeline toyed around with versus whatever player you want to pick in previous years.
Like the comparison to Caris LeVert for the season. Like, you know what I mean? Like, there was more information about him and no one was really talking about, like, oh, where's Caris? Where they really weren't, like, super explanatory about his injury either. And they're pretty much injured around the same time.
Yeah.
I mean, he had the exact same injury as a guy from the year before him. With Dinwiddie, and you know, no one was like, well, here's how many days it should take exactly based on preview. Like, I don't know. It was just not really like that. I was like, oh, cool, Karras is back.
Yeah, it's like he popped out. And I mean, the Nets do that. Like, they just are like, oh, yeah, well, this guy's actually practicing this week, and we expect him to play by the end of the week. It's like, oh, okay, you couldn't have told us that he started practicing. Like,
yeah, that's ridiculous. Yeah, I remember that last year with Karras. It was like, oh, by the way, so he's playing against the Bulls. I was like, oh, okay, cool. Well,
they posted a social media video, and there was like a little bit of Karras in it. And then all of a sudden, we were like, oh.
So, I don't know. That's what I'm saying. It's kind of hard to discern which one it is. But, you know, what can you do?
Getting back to Kyrie, what were some weaknesses you guys noticed of his game?
Weakness. I am in the works, and I don't want to go all out. I've done a little bit of statistical research, but there's an article that I'm working on the next couple of days.
Oh.
And yeah, oh yeah, there we go. I have to have one vain thing every single one of these podcasts where I self-promote myself like an asshole. But I've been trying to sort of like sift through this. I still need to like look at a couple of other like comps and stuff like that. There's a weird paradox with him. And I just noticed it just in watching, and like the numbers are so far supporting this a little bit. In the fourth quarter, he's so dominant offensively that it's by far the best option to give him the ball like every single possession. But at the same time, it takes his teammates out of the play so that they're not really involved with the offense. They're, you know, haven't shot for 2 minutes and stuff like that. And I'm just going off like assist numbers and stuff like that right now. So maybe I need to look a little bit deeper than that. But you have this like weird paradox going on where it's like, it doesn't make sense to give the ball to anybody else, but in giving him the ball every single possession and at least having him run the set, whether he's shooting or not, it weirdly, I don't know, creates a weird dynamic where his teammates are in a position where they just are, I don't want to say set up for failure, but I don't know how else to put it. So, and I think that that's something that will probably be less of an issue next year with KD on the floor. It's going to be those two alternating, and at least there's going to be a little bit more of a flow of an offense. But if he either gets tired or is just having trouble, you know, creating some separation against the opposing team, which doesn't happen all that often, but it happens occasionally, as we saw against Utah and Denver, the Nets are pretty much on his back. That was the biggest thing I noticed this year. I obviously need to workshop this a little bit more because that was the most elongated way of explaining that. But that's my weird paradox thing with him so far.
Yeah, I think that boils down to some notes that I sort of had as well, Matt, in terms of his ball dominance. You know, he had a career high in usage in 32.6%, the biggest year since 2017-18, his first year with the Boston Celtics, where he was at 31%. So, yeah, a percentage and a half. But the timing of when he had the ball the most, you know, a lot of it was at the start of games where, you know, the games I remember a lot were when he was, you know, getting Torian Prince some looks early, getting Joe Harris some looks early, and then he found his own rhythm. That didn't necessarily weren't the 50-point performances, the 39-point performances, and the 54-point performances, but it still led to a bit more team cohesion, which I guess sort of relates to the fact is, does he make his teammates better, you know, and or is he just a singular force that increases the level of a team? I don't think that's a question that can be answered after 20 games, but it's a question that I have nonetheless. And I think the defense, despite the fact that there were a lot of times where he showed effort and a lot of times where he was good, he was still bloody inconsistent on that side of the floor. And probably more at the start of the season than when he came back, because I think he was able to just get a look at what the Nets were sort of working with. And the times where the Nets didn't have him on the floor, the Nets were a pretty damn good defensive team, you know, and especially this season. And to start the season, that was the biggest issue. Everyone was just like, Kyrie's so awesome. What's wrong with the defense? Well, I think Kyrie was, you know, a pretty decent problem in that. I can't remember after which game it was. I think it was around the sort of Phoenix game. I don't think it was the Phoenix game, where it was sort of said that, you know, an anonymous scout, I think it was via the Brian Lewis, is sort of saying that, you know, we just attack Kyrie in the pick and roll, you know, because even if he is trying a lot there, when he's doing that little spin move that Matt alluded to, it exerts a bit of energy. When you're showing effort to work through a 7-footer like a Steven Adams or a Rudy Gobert laying a screen on you, that takes it out of you. And then you get the ball and they hit the basket and you get the ball back and you got to run a set by yourself. You know, I think that defense is still an issue for him.
Yeah, I think it's inconsistent at times. He was just a little bit you know, too risk-taking. Like, he would just go for the steals and kind of come off his guy. That happened a lot early in the year. I mean, I think some of it was, like, the defense wasn't having success, so he was trying to do too much. But again, like we talked about, he was okay defensively, but there's still always going to be the question about his size, especially if he gets switched on to a bigger guy. Like, I remember it was against Detroit. This was an early game in the season. They just consistently ran pick and roll against him with Bruce Brown. And And Brown was just bigger than him, and he really couldn't do anything about it. And Brown can't shoot. He was just trying to get in the paint, and they were sending pick and rolls at like the free throw line, and that was an issue. So I think as good as he showed effort defensively, there's still a question about, you know, consistency and also just going against bigger guys. And like Jack mentioned, making your teammates better. I think it's a question we can't really go into it yet because we got a 20 game sample size. But is he the guy that's making other people better, or is that something we have to depend more so of KD to do and let Kyrie get more back into that Cleveland role, which we talked about earlier, where he's just a scorer. Like, he's going to have his assists, but his best skill, as we kind of talked about offensively, is when he's scoring.
Yeah, I mean, so look, I know it's funny I said his strength was pick and roll defense. He was also, some of his lapses this year were, you know, like things like getting backdoored and stuff like that. I mean, he was up there. Him and Prince was another one, but I mean, like, he had some rough ones. Like, if the offense swung to like one the corners and stuff like that, or even went to the post, like, he was definitely, there was positions where he would get backdoor and stuff like that. So I think that's a good point that you bring that up. You know, there were aspects of his defense that I thought would be better. And maybe I should have seen it coming because, you know, basically his strengths on defense are what we've seen since the, what, like 2015 finals when he guarded Steph Curry really credibly on ball. But yeah, the aspects of his defense that really were never that great still haven't picked up all that much.
And I think we can give him somewhat of a pass because, like we talked about, his offensive workload was so high. We know how difficult it is for somebody to carry the team offensively and then be asked to do a ton defensively, especially like Jack mentioned with the scout saying, hey, we're just going to attack him and pick and roll. Like, you can only do so much in a basketball game unless other people are stepping up. And I think maybe, I don't know, like, this is kind of going back to us not being the locker room. I'm not sure how great the communication was early on, especially for, like, guys not wanting to get in his way. Like, it would have been easier if he allowed probably Spencer and Karis to carry some more of the load, just so it was easier for him, and then he could use more energy defensively. But obviously, he's Kyrie Irving, and his efficiency was crazy when he played.
Well, I don't even think we had to be in the locker room to realize that those guys had zero chemistry defensively. Every number will tell you that. And it was a bunch of guys that were starstruck for the first 2 weeks. That's what it felt like. It was like, I don't want to make mistakes. We're playing with Kyrie Irving. And
playing stiff.
It was just awkward to watch. I mean, look, like, say what you want about this Nets season, but weirdly, the least watchable part of it was those first 2 weeks. I was, like, pulling my hair out. Like, I don't know. Like, I, you know, I don't know if I favor one side of the ball or other, but I definitely notice when a team is, you know, not as good defensively versus if they're not as good offensively. That sticks out a little bit more on defense. I don't know why, but maybe
I think you're right, Matt, because a lot of the time it's just you get good shots and the shots don't fall. And a lot of the time that did happen for the Nets this year. You know, we in the Knicks game where we had like 80 points or something, we had some good shots and they just didn't
miss
fall.
Like 20 wide open threes in that game.
Yep.
Yeah, and that happens. That's basketball. You know, obviously, you know, that. And I think for me, because defense relies more on cohesion and communication, whereas offense, you can just have Kyrie Irving. You can have Joe Harris shoot a really nice contested three. You can have Karis, you use his insane footwork. You can have Spencer drive and just get contact. You know, you can have individual singular forces, whereas team cohesion, team chemistry is incredibly important on the defensive end. You know, you can have Patrick Beverley, Marcus Smart, Kawhi Leonard, Giannis, but if you don't have three or four or at least, you know, guys that can communicate, guys that are confident enough in their skills and that on the floor, then you're not going to be a good defensive unit.
Yeah, and I think rotations always stick out. Like, that's such an important thing in the NBA now because you're going to get beat. You're going to get beat off the dribble. You're going to get beat in pick and rolls. Guys are going to have to rotate down. It's about making that next rotation to prevent the wide open three or the backdoor cut, and that was really a big issue early in the season. Do you guys think some of maybe the lack of cohesion or chemistry could be due to the relationship with Kenny Atkinson and maybe Kyrie not buying into his defense or just, like, not picking up as quickly?
Ooh, that's an interesting thought. God, I got to think about what the Celtics played last year. They were a bit more switch heavy this year. So maybe that was it. I mean, you know, the Nets were playing mostly zone, a lot of zone at the start of the year, and actually running it pretty effectively. But they also played this weird drop coverage system. You know, the Celtics, I mean, they were running Horford at center. So that's obviously a different unit. It's going to be a bit more switchy. So, I mean, maybe it was him not buying in. It also just could have been a comfortability thing. You know, like we expect every, you know, especially for Kyrie, who's been in the league for what feels like forever. It really hasn't been that long. I mean, he's, you know, he's under 30. But, you know, we expect these guys, the older players, to come in and know how to play right away. But actually, like, it might be even harder for those guys to come in just because they have so much. You know, you only you can afford to have so much stuff in your memory, you know, in your long-term memory. So when you have years and years and years of basketball history, basketball schematics in your brain, you're going to have to categorize that differently. Maybe you're going to have a system that's kind of close to the one that you're running right now, but I don't know. So I think that there is, like, the issue of overlap in a sense is if you're looking at, you know, I would say more like for Kyrie and for everybody else for the Nets, because there were a lot of new players this year. And guys that have been in the league for a while, it was just an adjustment. It was really more of an adjustment thing. I think defense is one of the things that Kenny did really well this year.
I think Boston probably was more aggressive in terms of their defense, and the Nets are almost a little bit more laid back in this to the sense of, like, hey, you want a wide open mid-range shot, we'll give it to you, but we're not letting you get a three or a layup. And I think it definitely, like you mentioned, Matt, picking that up in the change. And you have to remember, it's only like a couple months you're going from playing with one team in April, and then next thing you know, you're playing with another team in October. And he missed a ton of training camp with a broken face. So
when you have Al Horford, Jalen Brown, and Marcus Smart, those are all three better defenders than the Nets have ever had in since we've been doing this show anyway. So that certainly lessens the load of Kyrie Irving and allows him to just sort of conserve that energy. In relation to the sort of Kenny Atkinson sort of relationship, I actually thought their relationship was really good. I think it might have been behind the scenes, we don't know, but it's not something I can comment on. And the things that I can comment on is when his mentor and one of his best friends passed away, you know, the love that Kenny showed for him, that hug for me is still a really heartwarming moment for when he did come back. You know, I thought the Kenny Atkinson and Kyrie Irving relationship was quite good. Kenny spoke glowingly of him, you know, despite the fact that, you know, it was rumored that, you know, he didn't feel comfortable coaching the superstars, and it was a reason why he wanted out. You know, but everything that we saw on the surface, which is, you know, what we judge it upon, I thought that their relationship was good. And, you know, defensively, I thought that it was more that it was the opposition coaches that were probably affecting Kyrie's defensive, you know, acumen more, because they kept attacking him because they knew that the offensive load for him was so high and that he wanted the offensive load for him to be so high. You can tell Kyrie just wanted the ball in his hands. You know, if he could have a Russell Westbrook level of usage, you know, a la OKC days in that triple-double season, he probably would have loved to have that. But, you know, I think he also realized that he needed to be the guy that sort of, you know, was the ultimate consummate teammate. So I think he was caught in a couple of different columns there. But yeah, for me, the defensive side had little, if anything, to do with Kenny Atkinson.
I thought it was a great point you brought up about Smart, Jalen Brown, and obviously Al Horford, just the defense. And I think, like, their defense, like I mentioned, was a little bit more aggressive, but having a defensive talent obviously is going to make a difference when one guy's carrying the offensive load. But moving on from there, what would be your ideal lineup for Kyrie Irving? We can talk about next year's roster. You can give me a player that fits, or you can just give me a skill set, you know, like the other four positions on the court.
Man, look, you need some defenders. that much. you need defenders if it's – I mean, we know what we're kind of working with Kyrie and KD and DeAndre Jordan. That's about all I can say I'm totally sure on. Garrett Temple, too, I actually would probably throw in the mix. So some defenders would be needed. I don't even want to say three-point shooting, because honestly, if you just go over the cap and bring back Joe Harris, you've got about the best in the business at that specific skill set. I know Jack is going to love to hear that one.
Yes, I am.
So, I mean, you know, what's the point in seeking after something when you've already got it sitting around on the roster ready to just launch threes on threes on threes? But some defenders would be nice. Aaron Gordon has been thrown around Nets Twitter for 2 years, and I actually don't think that his name could be more fitting than it is now. I just, you know, that type of a skill set would be nice. Someone that can guard the three and the four. Just somebody that can guard the LeBrons, the Giannis's, the Kawhis of the world. You know, you're not going to stop those guys, but at least put someone in front of them. So that's what I would say. But otherwise, surrounded by shooters, surrounded by guys that are low maintenance, that don't really need the ball. Because I'll be honest, when you see these two guys play, you're going to want to run everything through Kyrie and KD.
Yeah, I'll probably be repeating a lot of things that Matt said. Another superstar, you know, we sort of mentioned earlier that he can't really be the 1A when it comes to leading a championship team, but he can certainly be a very good 1B a la Spider-Man. You know, defensive wings, you know, I think that goes without saying. You know, a form of spacing that allows him to, you know, get his own three-point shot and also drive and get his own mid-range and get to the rim because, like we've mentioned on plenty of occasions, he's a sensational three-level scorer. And a little thing in terms of whether it's, you know, a Kevin Durant or, you know, a big or a center or a power forward, you know, guys who can set some nice physical screens for him to get him in some space. I think that that is something that could certainly give him a lot of value. You know, if you've got, you know, I think Tristan Thompson was a great screener and a great roller, you know, when Kyrie Irving was him in the pick and roll. You know, and I think that that is one thing that could certainly help. That's probably not talked about as much as the things that we sort of talked about in three-point shooting, defense, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah, you guys pretty much nailed it. I mean, like kind of Matt said, based off of what we know, we obviously know KD's going to be there. DeAndre's pretty much has a 90% chance that he's going to be starting next year. So then you plug Joe Harris in the other spot, and then you do want that kind of 3-and-D wing. Maybe don't even have to have the 3, maybe more the D, like Matt mentioned with Aaron Gordon. So the Nets, I think, have pieces to really capitalize. That's what I think, you know, obviously this is getting off topic, but what makes the trade talk so interesting, because some people think another star is ideal, while other people think a supercharged role player is ideal, because there are pieces there. A lot is obviously going to depend on the health of Kyrie and KD.
Yeah, and you could even go like cheapo if you want to just be like, hey, let's just, you know, keep what we've got. You could bring in, like, I've said Torrey Craig for a while. I love Torrey Craig. I think he's fantastic. You go kind of like the more minimum level market and bring in somebody like that. So, I mean, there's plenty of ways to go with it. You could either make a minor trade. I'm at the level now where I'm like, unless you're trading for a star who we know really, really fits, I can get into Beal just because of his way to create kind of off the catch. But if you're not bringing in somebody that isn't like this perfect fit as the third star, whether that's somebody that has a role playing skill set but does it as a superstar level, or, you know, is somebody that's good with the ball in their hands and has made their career out of being good with the ball in their hands but has showed instances of being able to create in a more like auxiliary role, then maybe it's just best to go for like a little bit, you know, of a lower scale complementary trade, or even just keep what you've got, see what you got going, who has synergy with KD and Kyrie, and, you know, and go a couple of like, you know, better veteran minimum signings. It's funny because the veteran minimum, I would say, like market this year, I actually think is a bit better. I'm just looking through it. It's like, yeah, there's a lot of guys that actually would make sense for the Nets. Millsap. You could do like, you know, there's a bunch of guys. I threw out Torrey Craig. You could bring Rondé back if you wanted to. There's guys that I think could work conceivably well. And so I that might be a way to go for it.
And guys might take a discount. Like we're talking about Kyrie for sure. And KD and the chance at a title. So, and even the idea of like signing the, you know, vet minimum guys or lower contracts gives you the flexibility where you can make a bigger move at the deadline if that's what you choose to do. But getting on from there, what improvements would you like to see from Kyrie going to next season? Where do you think he can improve his game that would help this team get closer to a championship, obviously assuming KD's healthy?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I mean, just like, staying on the court would be one. That feels like a super low blow, but like, honestly, not even staying on the court. Because that does feel like not... You know, I think what I want to see from the Nets with him is, I can't believe I'm saying this, this like goes against a lot of my my pretenses, but I kind of want to see them put him on a little bit of a load management program. And I can't believe I'm saying that, but because I want to see these guys on the floor as much as possible and build as much chemistry as you can, because it is, you know, you got two shots to make this work. But that's kind of what I want to see. It's like, you have Kyrie playing whatever, like 34 plus minutes, running everything through him and essentially exhausting him. I mean, right before he got injured, I remember talking to a couple of people and being like, yeah, I don't know if this is at all something that is sustainable game to game for Kyrie. It's just like, this is a guy that's injury prone. You're really going to just run him into the ground in search of barely getting above 500. So I would hope that they do either, you know, sort of lower his minutes or rest him on back-to-backs. There's got to be a way to do it. I'm afraid he's one of those guys. So that would be, you know, it's something that he's going to have to sign off on.
Because, yeah, I think he has to be open to it because, like, even he played through injury. I remember the Denver game when me, Jack and I talked about it. He had the injury, and we're like, why is he even playing? Like, if you're injured, your shoulder's hurting, your workload is already crazy, like, take the game off. We're on a West Coast trip. Like, beating Denver at home is already a tough thing to do.
And one thing that I think both of you sort of said, I don't think he necessarily yet has the trust for the organization. And I think a lot of that is going to come down to, you know, who is the head coach? You know, if it's Ty Lue, Greg Popovich, maybe Mike D'Antoni, but I think if it's Ty Lue or Greg Popovich, you're automatically going to be like, okay, those guys can tell him, tell Kyrie what to do, and he will at least listen to them somewhat. Maybe not as much Ty Lue, because we've certainly heard of plenty of instances where he's just like, look, you know, you've got LeBron James on your team, just talk to that guy, don't worry about me. So I think that in terms of, we know the whole coaching dynamic when it comes to Kyrie Irving, you know, that obviously Kenny Atkinson isn't the guy to coach superstars at this point of his career right now. Well, we don't necessarily know that because he won't be given the chance. But I don't necessarily know who is it going to be that is the person that goes, Kyrie, you're going to have to play 31 minutes for these nights and we might ramp it up. You know, is he going to turn into Michael Jordan a la Last Dance, where he's just like, you know, if we've got him on a minutes limit, then he's just going to go absolutely batshit crazy for the rest of the other minutes, and, you know, or maybe we get him Kobe style, and where he's just like, you know, all sulky in certain periods. It is going to be a fascinating dynamic, but I do 100% think that there has to be something in place for him in relation to, you know, his injuries. You know, they are catching up to him. He is not, the fact that he's only 28 years old heading into next season isn't necessarily, you know, he's an old 28. He's a Jimmy Butler 28. You know, he's a guy that's got miles on his legs, injuries on his legs and arms and every other part of his body for that matter. You know, we know the shoulder injury, you know, as Christian Winfield reported for the New York Daily News, should have him healthy by September-ish. You know, that's obviously according to an outside source, not necessarily within Kyrie Irving and his camp. But I'm still incredibly hesitant about, you know, what Kyrie is going to produce for this team, how much he's going to produce for this team. When he's out there, I'm pretty damn confident. And when he's healthy, there is no issue at all. It's just if those things can happen, you know, durability and availability matter more than anything when it comes to Kyrie Irving. And I think I put that, you know, in my National Public piece. That's all that necessarily matters. If he's out there for 65 plus games, you know, for 30 minutes, 32 minutes, whatever it might be, then I think the Nets are going to be a pretty successful team.
Honestly, I don't even care if he plays 50 games in the regular season, long as he's healthy for the postseason. Like, that's all that really matters, especially with him and KD. Like, you have them both in the series. And kind of like you said, Jack, it's just like there's no point in really playing back-to-backs when he has the injury history. And that might be an argument for keeping the depth on the team. It's a lot easier to sit Kyrie if, you know, you're putting Spencer or Karras in as a starter that's replacing him, a fringe all-star guy. So, but I'd also say, like, defensively, playing his role. I think we kind of talked about it. He was cheating a little bit too much, trying to get those steals, biting in passing lanes. Based off of the defense they had last year, he kind of need to stay in his position a little bit more. And then I'd say, like, just work on complimenting others, you know, like helping, impacting the game where you're making your teammates better. It's obviously, he's not drastically going to change his skill set in one season, but I think there's little things, like you mentioned earlier on, Jack, in the beginning of the game, get Prince some shots, get Harris some shots, get them going so they feel in rhythm when you need to throw them a pass in the fourth quarter.
I'm going to say something a little inflammatory. Was there one guy who playing next to him this year that you felt like their stock went up? And I'm not blaming that on him. It actually may be on the players that were playing with him and being scared, as we mentioned. But was there somebody that really upped their game next to him? Because I'm not sure if there was.
Actually, I'm literally going, like, if we go through the names, Torian Prince, no. Joe Harris, no. Caris LeVert, when he was playing with Kyrie, no. Spencer Dinwiddie, probably is the closest name I can think of. But I still don't think that he, you know, if you, we're giving him a pass, you know, I'm not giving him a full tick. I'm giving him, you know, a C+, if that. DeAndre Jordan, when he had some time with him, you know, I don't really think there's a large enough sample size because he was playing with the second unit when Kyrie Irving was healthy for the most part. Garrett Temple, maybe, you know, maybe Garrett Temple is the name. I really don't know. And I think that I don't think that there is, Matt.
Yeah, it felt like, to be honest, like one guy that stuck out that played worse with him was Jared Allen. It felt like every time Kyrie hit Jared Allen with a pass, he would like drop it or not finish. And it felt like he was kind of starstruck by Kyrie and the pressure really got to him. I'm trying to think of a guy that had a positive impact, but it's tough to say.
You guys want the one? I just looked up the numbers right now on NBA stats, their two-man data.
Let me guess.
He had
it's David Nwaba.
Four guys, David Nwaba and Kyrie had a. I don't know. Okay, so keep in mind, minutes total is 28 total minutes. So we're playing with the dumbest. I shouldn't even say this out loud.
Do it. We love dumb shit on the Brooklyn Bus.
26.4 points per 100 possessions is what they're outweighing. So they had an 85.9 defensive rating, which is like historically incredible, which tells you how good David Nwaba was.
Get back.
The one that actually sticks out is him and Dinwiddie, which is what I was looking at this a lot throughout the year, and it was a number that stuck with me. They were 7 points per 100 possessions better on the floor, than I guess like the mean average. So that is pretty sizable. The next closest was, oddly enough, Jared Allen and Irving, 1.4 net rating together. But I'm pretty sure that coincides with Jared Allen being, you know, maybe playing his best stretch of basketball. So and it also just kind of coincides with Jared Allen just being like an analytics darling in a lot
of
ways.
He really is, yeah.
I would take that with a grain of salt. But
who is fourth?
Prince. So that's when you should be like, all right, we're done looking at the
we're done there, yeah.
I think Prince actually played okay for like the first couple weeks of the season, so it makes sense. Yep.
Well, he was shooting like 40%. Everybody was like, all right, this makes sense. Like that guy, like the first week of TP basketball, it was like, wow, I don't know how Marks does it. He's shooting 40%. I was souring on him a little bit just because of like defensive stuff, but he was one of the many Nets who wasn't, you know, like rotating well and leaving guys open and leaving trailers open. So he wasn't the only one and he was hitting his threes, but he was shooting the hell out of the ball, and the numbers say that as well.
Come on, Matt. Save it for the Prince preview, mate. We'll get you on there, all right? We need that shot for that.
Man, that'll be brutal.
God bless him. All right, final question. Where does Kyrie Irving rank at his position entering next season?
You know what? It has not moved after this season. I'm still probably going to pick him over Westbrook. I've just seen it from him. I know what it looks like in a final series. I know that he can score against the best. I know he can play exactly to how he wants to, and it works. So I'm going to put him over Westbrook. I had the best point guard in the league coming into this season as Steph, then Dame, then Kyrie. Nothing has changed this year. Not a damn thing.
The one argument I made, or just as I was sort of doing the research as well, Matt, was that Chris Paul was freaking awesome this year.
Oh, man.
And obviously next year, I think, you know, another year under his legs, if he's in OKC, I think he can continue to be incredibly efficient. You know, he was the best fourth quarter player in the league. And I think that there is a lot that could be said for that. So equal 3A, 3B with Chris Paul, if not above him when he's healthy. But, you know, Chris Paul has been ridiculous this year. All NBA level in his caliber. Yep. I would have him third, fourth, however you want to put it out there.
That's a great point. So the thing with Chris Paul is I made this reference today sort of in passing, is that if he comes out, you know, and it's like not fair. I feel like I'm treating Chris Paul like he's like a like a third year pro being like, well, if he does it again. But I do kind of need to see it one more year. I mean, you think about like where Blake Griffin was coming into, or like the end of last year, right before he got injured. This guy is like an all NBA forward. He's having this crazy revelation as a player. He's playing out of his mind in Detroit. He's one of the best forwards in the league, period.
Yeah.
And then it's like, you know, it all kind of cascades for him. So that's the only thing I'm worried about with CP. But CP has a resume. You know, out of respect, I almost just want to put him there at number three. But you know, I think that part of making these top lists is whether you mean to or it's a little bit more unconscious, you are going to take into account age and I guess the curve of what that may look like. And it is a little bit of you're prophesizing about what it's going to look like over the years, whether you mean to or not. That's just going to come in there, that bias. So right now, that's where I would have him over CP, but that's a great point. There's an argument there.
Yeah, I'd probably go with Kyrie too. Just the fact that CP3 is going to be 35 next year. And then I also think they're going to probably look to kind of up the load of SGA. You know, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, I think he's going to take on a bigger role. And then obviously, like, the older player is going to step back a little bit. Then there's also, I know we talked to Dave before on the NBA outlet, and he thought that, you know, there's a good chance that CP3 could get traded if he wants to be traded, just because of the way he's played.
And to the Nets, apparently, because that was the name that I saw when I woke up this morning. I'm like, all right, we're getting Chris Paul now? Cool, Chris Paul, Ben Simmons, John Bain, give them all to me.
You got an all-star appearance on your resume, the Nets are trying to trade for you.
True that. One question before we end this one that I had for you guys, and I've heard this on other podcasts, and I wanted to throw it at people who I truly trust when it comes to Nets talk. Do you guys think that we've already seen peak Kyrie Irving, or is there a sustained period where Kyrie's got a couple more years in him, or can he go to another level? What do you think?
Michael Pena at...
That's the one.
Last name. You saw that one on SB Nation? It was good.
That's the one. Yeah.
Very good article. There were a lot of things I agreed with, some things I didn't agree with. I do think that's an interesting question, though. That was the thing that I liked that he asked. You know, I think that there is a little bit of a misconception from, like, the outsider perspective that, you know, he had this year where, you know, he was just basically more of the same in Boston. It really wasn't like that. Like, when he was on the court, it was the best he's ever been, ever. Yeah. And it wasn't as disastrous as it was in Boston, where it was, like, personality clashes. You just didn't really get that with him. There wasn't, like, somebody like a Jaylen Brown or whoever that wasn't really, you know, vibing with Kyrie, I guess, in a sense. But it's worth asking. I mean, the biggest thing that it'll all come down to is health. If he's healthy, he's going to outdo whatever he's done so far. Maybe he won't be hitting one of the most famous shots in a final series again. I don't know. There's a very good chance he also could. That guy is clutch as it comes. But
we hope to see it.
I know. Me too, man. It would be incredible. But that would be the only thing that strips that away. If he's just another T-Mac, you know, and weirdly enough, another Deron Williams. But that's kind of what I would be looking at. And that's the only thing that would stop that. Because, I mean, the guy was out of his mind this year when he was on the floor.
Yeah, I think offensively as a scorer, like, maybe we saw Pete Kyrie this year. I'm not sure if he can really get much better than what we saw in that first stint of games. I would say the area that he didn't get better, and I kind of harped on this before, is just kind of making his teammates better. Whatever that is just like playing a better role on a winning team. But it's hard to say that he hasn't done that, because I think all of us would agree his ceiling is being the second best player in a championship team. And he's already proved he could do that. And he won a championship against one of the greatest teams of all time. So it's
I'd really cut you off there. No, like, the other thing that's, like, tricky about that is, like, are you looking at him statistically?
Yeah.
Are we looking at this as a success thing? Because back in 2016, like, he was out of his mind, but it still kind of felt like he was just really, like, we were getting a feel for, like, oh, man. Like, I remember he hit his career high against the Spurs
the year before,
which you guys watch, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yes. So he hit this career high. It was, like, his big, like, breakout game. So that's not that far removed from what he did in the finals. And, you know, me and what I would be, what I'm trying to say in a very long-winded way is that there is a world in which he comes out, he lays the smackdown next to Durant. It's an entire year of just, like, real deal, top end, top two basketball that continues into the playoffs. And those guys take down a team as 1A, 1B in the Bucks or whoever. And then go to the finals and play one of those LA teams and do the same thing. So I think there is a world in which, yeah, he actually could raise his ceiling and just raise the general perception around him. He won't be just the young gun next to LeBron anymore. He's the 1B next to Durant that just, you know, won a freaking championship for a city that is, I mean, you know, from both teams has not seen one in a very long time.
And I think there's even maybe an argument he was that guy in the Cleveland finals. Like, there were people that said Kyrie should have won MVP. Like, it's not like he didn't score a crazy amount, and he was putting up, you know, 40-point performances with LeBron. Obviously, LeBron had the bigger impact in the series, but I don't think Kyrie was, like, super far behind LeBron in that series. Like, obviously, it's always going to be about LeBron just the way the media is, but if you really, like, watch game to game there, even in Game 7, like, Kyrie had a giant game, and he was hitting tough shots after tough shots over great defense from Klay Thompson.
Well, but I
you
guess
did
I'll
feel
be...
like that was his series, though, in a sense, where he just made it LeBron, I mean. Like, it really did feel like a LeBron series, even in the way that they won, in a lot of ways, just by, like, baiting Draymond. Like, I think there's a chance where you could be like, oh, wow, like, Kyrie just took over, and that was the Kyrie series, you know, even from a narrative sense. I think there's a world where you could do it.
Yeah, and I'm generally the skeptic on the Brooklyn bus, so I guess I'll be the skeptic again. I think that for me, I'm quite worried about the injury history. Like, I went to typed in Kyrie Irving injuries, and the list of injuries is plentiful with a capital P. It's something that, when is it going to catch up to him? Because eventually it does. Matt, you mentioned the name earlier when Blake Griffin. You know, Blake Griffin is a guy who has been injury prone. But when we saw that greatness from him when he was healthy, it was, you know, he was one of the best forwards in the league. He was all NBA caliber. For me, and I think it's the scariest thing about this Brooklyn Nets team and the fact that we're all in on this. And I'm glad that we are, because, you know, you're in the championship race. But, you know, your two primary guys that you are relying on are coming off very, very, very serious injuries. Now, their greatness, individual greatness and skill warrants, you know, you buying all in no matter what, but it's not a guarantee. It is not a guarantee if you were doing it with a guy who has, you know, a LeBron James or whoever it might be. You know, there are very few players who don't have an injury history. You know, I think Kevin Durant is one that is probably a safer bet. It's just that he's had the most serious injury that you can probably get as a basketballer or athlete. Whereas Kyrie Irving's injury history is sustained. You know, he barely played more than 70 games across his career. That year that he did win the chip, and we were sort of talking about earlier, I don't care if he played, Nick said, I don't care if he plays 50 games. He did play like 50, 55 games in that season, and he was healthy when it mattered come the postseason, and he delivered to a tremendous degree. I think that the injuries, there is a high, or at least an above average likelihood, that they could catch up to him sooner rather than later. You know, 28 years old, having, you know, injuries aplenty, you know, for 4+ seasons, 5+ seasons across his career. He is an injury-prone player. I think that we can safely label him as that. And that is one thing that does worry me, that, you know, we have seen the best of him. The best of him is a very general concept, but for me, the best of him requires him being available. And I don't know if he is going to be available enough, like we sort of saw this year. You know, when we saw him, it was amazing, but we saw him 20 games, you know, and if is that going to happen again next year? Is it going to be 40 games? Is it going to be 50 games? You know, I think there has to be at least 50 games and healthy for playoffs. Then we go, okay, Kyrie Irving's healthy, Kyrie Irving's at his best. But if we see another 20, 30 game season out of him, then I know that I'm going to be bloody disappointed.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point, Jack. I think you definitely can be worried. You could also make an argument the Nets would benefit if the next NBA season was postponed in terms of, like, it doesn't start until November or December because they're allowing Kyrie and KD to get more rest. And I think when you just deal with so many injuries like Kyrie, you're trying to get as much rest as possible. And I think at times it's hard for NBA players that want to be so great to get that rest because instead of taking time off, they just continue training.
Yeah, true.
But Matt, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
No, yeah, just I want to see Kyrie Irving play more basketball next year. It was very fun to play spectator to, and I just, yeah, I'm excited for next year. I just, you know, I'll say this every time you guys have me on. I can't wait till basketball is back.
Damn straight.
As always, a pleasure, Matt. Big thanks for hopping on. And Jack, we always have fun talking Nets. You can find the show on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, OTGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, and Blue Wire Pods.
Sugar Ray Leonard, Roberto Duran, Marvelous Marvin Hagler, and Thomas Hearns. Legends, whose four-way rivalry defined one of the greatest eras in boxing history. Relive their decade of dominance in the new Showtime sports documentary, The Kings, a four-part series premiering Sunday, June 6th, only on Showtime.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. In hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.